name is Candy Shinner from the organisation Koha, who will be speaking later on. But my question is specifically for Avital. Since the days of Ruth Yaron, we've been trying to coordinate. We represent Hasbara from the volunteer sector grassroots internationally. Since the days of Ruth Yaron, we have been trying to coordinate the grassroots efforts. You talked about pressure groups. We were considered as pressure groups, as Jewish organizations, excuse me, as somebody to do Hasbara after the case. Do you not think that in the strategic planning, the efforts of the grassroots communication has to be there as an essential asset in the planning of your strategic, so you have a role for them beforehand of the operations that you do, so that they can prepare the way and work in coordination with the IDF instead of using them as lobby people after the mess-ups?
By the way, we have a strategic branch, the spokesperson unit, which is a new branch. We're not there yet in what you're just suggesting, but I do think it's a very important for us to take advantage of all these groups. As a new part of the reorganization that our unit is passing now, there will be a new branch, totally new branch, that will work with various organizations. This was just a small section before. So the intention of the unit is to give it some more thought and see the best way in which we can use these organizations. And this branch is about to form in another month. So this is not just something in the air, and I'll be glad to give you my details later on so we can organize a meeting.
Eve Harrell, I've been involved with Israel advocacy for a long time, and I have a question and something to say that I don't think is going to be very popular. But I think the Israeli government, if we're looking at them for solutions, they might actually be part of the problem. You see, Itamar has done his job magnificently, and I don't think that the world likes Arabs very much. Okay, and anybody who's been in an airport and had to fight with someone over if she can keep her Lancome lipstick to take it on the plane now realizes that Arabs in particular, and maybe Palestinians in general, are not very well thought of in the world. So that case has been made. However, if we broadcast pictures of people who act in absolutely insane ways, like a death cult, and then the next week we give them guns, legitimacy, land, offering for a state, we are acting guilty. And so ultimately what the world is picking up is, if they're still like this, yet we're still willing to give them things, then maybe their statement that they are the ultimate victims of the Holocaust, that as bad as they are, we are worse, is the reason that Israel is now on probation in the eyes of the world. That we have no moral reason to exist because as bad as these people are, and they're bad, Itamar is proving it all the time, we've done even worse. And until the Israeli government understands that it's not 67 and the occupation that has caused the Arab world to hate us, but it's 48, the Nakba, in their own words, why aren't we listening to them, that has caused them to hate us? And until we stand up and say that we have the right to be here, and even if they suddenly turn into a nation of Mother Teresa's, that doesn't legitimize us doing what we're doing in terms of what we're offering them, it's only going to get worse and worse and worse. And the Israeli government's here, and we're talking about them forming Hasbara units to give a message that doesn't make sense to the world. This is, I think, and I spent years speaking to groups, this is the basic problem. So maybe we need to go the other way. If we, as the little people in Israel, can't count on the Israeli government to back us in a message that maybe doesn't make sense anyway, then maybe the little people need to take it upon themselves to do that. And then the Israeli government can say, well, what can we do? These are individual organizations. And we have to take it upon ourselves. But makom she'ein ish, if there's no leadership in saying what needs to be said, because we're fighting for our lives now, nothing else, then maybe all these little groups are going to have to do it. And the government can try and pretend and whatever it is. They've got an agenda that's very different from the one that a lot of us have. And it makes it's with a tremendous amount of grief that I say that.
Thank you. Does anybody think that they have to respond to that, or can I just say something about that? I don't disagree with you except for the fact that you have to remember that the government has to deal with the large politics and with sometimes the small politics, and you can debate which is which. And when it comes down to it, you have to, you know, I think we don't have any real good choices, but we have a very difficult region to live in. And we can't ignore the people we're dealing with, and we have to find a way to live with them. So when you have branches that are promoting certain things and are exposing the problems of the Palestinians, the Prime Minister or the government has the unfortunate job of having to deal with the nitty-gritty daily things. And that means at times doing things you're not happy with, but it's the better of two bad outcomes. If it means at the moment, I'm not saying this is a matter of policy or talking government line at the moment, just theoretically telling you, if we have to deal with the moment of Abu Mazen succeeding compared to India, what's our preference? Ignoring the situation or telling the curse on both their houses is not going to help the state of Israel. So it's obvious where we have to go there. It's not, there are no good choices in this. And that's for when we're talking about strategies, it's one thing. And the daily things you have to deal with, the government has to, and these are the things that Amital and I and the foreign ministry deal with on a daily basis, is dealing with the putting out the local fires. So you can't mix up these two things. And a strategy is one thing, but sometimes, for example, there is no... People who understand the situation, I don't think most Americans know that we're allowing to give them weapons. I don't think they really... I don't think it creates that discrepancy of their understanding of what we're dealing with. But the government of Israel knows that we have to deal with that, and our preference is at the moment, I can't say we're not supposed to remark on the situation within the Palestinian Authority, but I think it's quite clear. Anybody else wants to answer that question? Or we'll take another.
Well, I just have one general comment, and that there's really never any such thing as the government or as a government. Governments are made up of lots of different people doing lots of different things. Usually there are some very bad people, some very good people. So it's not helpful to talk about the government. If you really want real action in the real world, you have to be targeted. You have to be specific about a person, a department, a division, and then very specifically about how you want them to change. And you also have to consider why they're doing what they're doing and the people trying to do it.
Hi, Dominic Lover, ICT. I'm going to play devil's advocate and possibly make myself rather unpopular by asking if there's really any point at all in defending ourselves at this stage in the Mohammed al-Dura case. As Itamar has documented quite well, al-Dura established or reinforced the paradigm of an innocent Palestinian child, either completely unarmed or perhaps with a rock against a Merkava tank, and becoming what I call a suicide propagandist. Now the problem is, in the case of Mohammed al-Dura, Israel probably was innocent. However, even after Mohammed al-Dura, even after the pictures hit the newspapers and television stations, Palestinians sent many more kids out to endanger themselves. And even Israel, even after we saw the damage of Mohammed al-Dura, we continued to shoot them. And after Mohammed al-Dura, hundreds of children were killed who presented no danger to Israeli soldiers or Israeli civilians. This was under a left-wing administration, interestingly enough, the worst statistics. So if we're innocent of Mohammed al-Dura, the problem is that we're guilty of hundreds of other cases. The only difference is that they weren't caught on television. So if we defend ourselves, will it really accomplish anything when Mohammed al-Dura, as a phenomenon, is very legitimate, even if Mohammed al-Dura, as an individual case, was not?
Thank you. Yes?
Nidra Power. I just want to briefly read three excerpts from an article published in Le Monde, the newspaper of record in France, on the 4th of September 2006. And then I'll tell you who wrote it. The title is, Tzahal Treats the Media as Enemies. Two Israeli missiles hit a Reuters press vehicle. One of the journalists is critically injured. NGOs protest. Tzahal replies, they shouldn't have been there. Since 2000, more than 60 journalists have been wounded by gunfire in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Further, this is proof that Israeli authorities think that in the name of security for their citizens, they can silence those who broadcast their enemy's viewpoint. And it goes on to condemn the bombing of the Al-Manar station in the recent Hezbollah war. And it is signed by Robert Ménard and Pierre Vierte of Reporters Sans Frontières, the Reporters Without Borders.
Thank you.
I can only promise to keep this questions and not make a speech. My name is Frieda Keat, and after many years as a broadcaster, I became very, very involved in Hasbara for Israel. For more than 20 years, I have traveled the highways and byways of all of the industry who are lecturing for Israel. I also have my own personal outreach to evangelical Christians. So what I say just as a buck private who has been out under fire in the front lines. And these are some of the things that I observe and grieve over and mourn over when I am held hostage by the media in countries where I happen to be and watch our deficits and watch our backsliding and our shortcomings. I'm grateful that the Army is here and you, Mr. Seaman, because my two questions are addressed to both of you. The IDF constantly makes statements that I, as a very dedicated and passionate Israeli, do not doubt for an instant. Tunnels that are constantly being found. There was a story not so long ago about children's toys that were packed with explosive charges. Why do you do nothing with it? You never take it anywhere. You're constantly talking about what you see and what you find. Why don't you give me proof of this? And I'm reminded of the words of the song from My Fair Lady. Don't talk of string, don't talk of fall, don't talk of all, show me. And my next question then, the continuation of that, is to you, Mr. Seaman. Now, if I'm incorrect, again, I'm basing my statements on my experiences on the front line defending Israel in the outside world. Is it possible, with all the time maintaining our high standards that I talk about in my speeches, of Israel as an open, free society, a bastion of democracy, all those things that we represent, is it not possible nonetheless to lay down some kind of guidance, some kind of rules for foreign reporters in this country? I'm not suggesting we do what Hezbollah does and do guided tours, but can we nonetheless not make it known and understood, and I know that you do things like this, if we constantly claim that we have found tunnels, can we not take these reporters to the tunnels, make them go down if necessary? We need to make these things that we claim that are such a powerful weapon, I know how I could use them in my speaking, and we make these statements, we carry them nowhere, is it not possible to somehow enforce some kind of guidelines for reporters who operate in Israel? Thank you.
Essentially, a question for Itamar and for the woman from Dover Tal. And how much would it cost to take these films and translate them into all the languages of the target audiences that we're interested in approaching? And I'd like, Danny, I guess for you as the representative of the civilian government, are you honestly saying that it's not in our national interest right now to translate these things and to get them out because we're actually giving guns to Abu Mazen and we really can't, we don't want to overdo the fact that he's teaching his children to become human, or his government is teaching children to become human torches and mass murderers. So therefore we're soft-pedaling it, because it's hard otherwise to understand how it could be that the material we just saw 5 minutes ago is not available in every country in the world, including in Hebrew. Regarding Dover Tzal, I think, I'm not sure if you were here yesterday, but we had a long discussion yesterday about the question of whether we have enough manpower to deal with the problem. But Olivier, I saw lying around with him, and I went to Jenin together a couple of years ago in the middle of the conflict, and I remember that his phone rang approximately 70 times on the way in and out of Jenin. He was the only officer who was authorized to speak directly to, or to authorize interviews with foreign press. He asked for his answering service to give the last 15 messages, which included the New Yorker, the New York Times, Paris Monde, and the other 55 odd messages that were in his answering machine he didn't have time to reach. And I asked him why, and he said, "I must speak to Kanim." And I'm wondering if under the current Dover Tzahal, if there's serious thinking, particularly in the aftermath of the war, as to whether to make this a department that is led by a general as opposed to a Tataluf, with all the implications in terms of the availability of Tikkanim. In other words, whether we can have enough, so at least we can say to ourselves, we did the best we could, and we have enough people out there. This is a big country. We don't necessarily need volunteers. There's a lot of people in Milui, you know, who can be drafted, and they're not drafted. And I wonder, and I assume, you know, and the question really is whether this is something that the Army is considering seriously today.
Okay, I work with the National Security Council, Prime Minister's Office, and in the past 5 years I've been involved in attempting to improve relations between Israel and the EU, and I've done it both in Brussels and in Washington, D.C., for private organizations. I'm not commenting here about strategic communication. I think we've heard the fascinating presentations here and what Ranan and Gissen had to say. But I do want to comment about the gap that exists, the gap between the expectations of the many friends of Israel from the Israeli official administration and what this administration can actually produce, the formal Israel. I think there is a gap here. I think that there is an inherent built-in limitations to what Israeli officials can do. And I think that in order to bridge this gap, our friends abroad should develop their own capabilities. They should be able to work independently and produce by themselves the materials they need, the strategy they need. By the way, then, when they will have these capabilities, Israelis will be more willing to support them. This is a case of example, a place where I worked at in Washington, APAC.
Understand that. You've left him hanging out to dry. He's being sued. Let's not
conduct personal debates here.
Felipe Ersantini.
That's why coffee time is here. Let him.
3 years ago, Felipe and I met in Washington when I was working at APEC. And Felipe already then had his problems. And he was asking me at APEC to help. What I could do is trying to push APEC and other organizations in America to teach Europeans how to develop their own capabilities. Because I know, as an observer of this for several years already, that the Israelis can do only that much. I'm not an expert here on why, but this is the reality that we are facing. Israelis, just to give you an example, most of the Israelis dealing with Hezbollah, their only mission abroad, the only time they actually spent time abroad was in a mission. As former representatives of the State of Israel, the only interaction they had with foreigners was in some kind of a job, in their job, or behind their digital camera screens when they travel abroad. So they have a problem of communicating the message as well as local Europeans, friends of Israel, or local American friends of Israel. Many of them are here. But unfortunately, they need to be able to develop their own capabilities in order to have a real impact. This is my opinion.
Thank you.